New Testament, you'll find there's one history book. What's that? One history book in the New Testament. What is it?
Book of Acts.
Book of Acts. Thank you. You mean to tell me there's no history in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? You mean to tell me there is no history in the epistles? The entire Bible is a history book. And we're told there's 12 books of history in the Old Testament. But well, wait a minute, what about Genesis? Is that a book of history? It's not included in that 12. The entire Bible is a history of God's relationship with man. And I'm going to look at it this week from the standpoint of the falling away and restoration of man. The entire Bible, from Genesis to Revelation, deals with this idea of God having a covenant relationship with His people, there being a division of falling away and God restoring man. That's the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation. How many of you loved history when you were in high school? Raise your hand. Well, the other half of you didn't care for it, did you? Well, let me give you some reasons for that. Number one, you didn't care what happened 200 years ago. You were more concerned about what happens Friday night, right? Number two, your teacher may not have been excited about history. He may have been more concerned about rolling out a ball than teaching you about history. And bless your hearts, not all of you could have had me for a history teacher like Regina. And you might have gotten a little more out of it, I think, because I love history and I get excited about it. And when I retired from full-time work about 23 years ago, I started studying restoration history. And I thought I knew something about it, but I didn't. And I want to share with you some things because I think God wants you to know why you're sitting here today. How did you get here today? Well, something might have happened 200 years ago that caused you to be here today. You ever thought about that? And I believe that's the case. And so we want to talk about some of these things. Now, how many of you have ever been called a Camelite? Raise your hand. Okay. And why do you suppose people call you that? Because of Alexander Campbell. Well, I tell you, several years ago, Alton Bailey called me up and said, Frank, we've got a fellow here in the church that thinks that Alexander Campbell started the Church of Christ. Do you have a lesson on that? And I said, well, I can have one. And I went and shared a lesson pointing out that Alexander Campbell did not start the Church of Christ. But that seems to be a common thing. I had a fellow here in Colbert County one time several years ago. A minister in a Church of Christ asked me, oh, you're a Camelite too? And I said, no, I'm a Christian. I don't follow Alexander Campbell. And so this idea of Alexander Campbell starting the church, a lot of people will tell you that. We had a neighbor a few years ago, and we invited him to services, and he says, oh, that's Camelite church. I said, what? He said, yeah, that's a church started by Alexander Campbell. Well, now, I could not convince him otherwise. So if you want to believe that Alexander started the Church of Christ, that's your business. But I'm going to tell you, you're wrong. Who started the Church of Christ? Christ. When? About 2,000 years ago. In Matthew 18, Jesus said, upon this rock I will build what? My church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. So Jesus Christ built His church, and yet people come along today and they say, well, Alexander Campbell started the Church of Christ. Well, the truth of the matter is they don't know what they're talking about. And I don't want to be ugly about that. They are just ignorant of how the church started and what the church is all about. And so we want to talk about that. But I want to go back and just briefly point out some common names given to members of Churches of Christ in the 17th century. That's the 1600s, by the way. Look at these names. Separatists, dissenters, Antibaptists, Baptists, Dippers, Lollards, Congregationalists, and Puritans. And since the Baptist church is so common in this area, I thought I would just share with you briefly some information about the history of the Baptist church. John Smith is given credit for starting the Baptist church. He started the Baptist church with a man by the name of Thomas Helwys. John Smith was only with the Baptists for less than a year and left and joined the Anabaptists. Thomas Helwys was the first Baptist preacher in England. Now keep in mind, I said that these are terms that people give members of the church. Let me share with you some information about Thomas Helwys, the founder of the Baptist Church. And this is written by Dr. Joe Early Jr., his book on the life and writings of Thomas Helwys. He is an authority. He teaches in a Baptist seminary about these things. And let me tell you what he wrote about this. That Thomas Helwys believed baptism is essential to salvation. Page 47. It's not taught in Baptist churches today. Here is true baptism for the remission of sins, page 257. In a letter written by Helwys in 1610, he refers to the church of which he was a member as the Church of Christ. Think about that. Those who used to be part of us are not of the Church of Christ. The holy ordinance of God debars no one from being a member of the Church of Christ. And so this early, quote, Baptist claimed to be a Christian and a member of the Church of Christ. And all such things, the holy man of God teaches that this is a great impiety for any Church of Christ to suffer and any false teachers to teach false doctrine. Let the children of God learn to know and profess that in the Church of Christ there's the Spirit of the Lord's mouth. There's no prophecy of Scripture to be found in the Church of Christ of a spiritual power setting up a pope or a bishop. Helwys denied the doctrine of limited atonement. He said that every church should break bread every first day of the week. Does that sound like the Church of Christ? It does to me. And so one of the fellows given the credit for starting the Baptist Church claimed to be a Christian, a member of the Church of Christ, a minister of the Church of Christ. And a lot of people never understand that. So there are a lot of terms that have been used over the years for members of the church that don't have anything to do with the name Christ. But let me just mention this also, that in my studies I have found almost 40 churches of Christ in the 1600s in England and Ireland and Scotland. So I have documented these. And the first Baptist church was Spitalfields, you see there, in the upper corner there. And that Baptist church was referred to by Helwys as the Spitalfields Church of Christ. And so history's kind of skewed some of this for us. And we need to learn that churches were in existence preaching New Testament doctrine long before Alexander Campbell was ever born. The first to preach the gospel in America was Robert Sandeman. He lived from 1718 to 1771. He was influenced by his father-in-law, John Glass, and Glass had a number of ideas about the church that I think that we would agree with today. But he came to America in 1764, and he held a number of doctrinal positions that you would be very familiar with. Let me share with you what Sandeman had to say. He disputed Calvinism. He said that churches of Christ were independent and autonomous. They observed the Lord's Supper every week, took up a weekly collection, believed in a plurality of elders, believed in a cappella singing, and called themselves churches of Christ. Refused titles like Reverend, and they refused to call the first day of the week the Sabbath. And by the way, if there's any electricians in here, Robert Faraday, the father of electricity, was a faithful member of the Sandemanians, which called themselves the Church of Christ. And so Sandeman comes to America, and he establishes a number of churches, and most of them are in the Northeast, and there's about 10 of them listed here. You see the arrows pointing to that. We don't have time to spend time on that, but I wanted to suggest to you that before Campbell, there were a number of churches of Christ in America. Alexander Campbell lived from 1788 to 1866, and he came to America in 1809. There were many churches in America. at that time, prior to his coming, that were practicing New Testament Christianity. Don't have time to look at all that, but I did mention that he stayed with the Baptists until 1828. And last year I was asked to write an article for the Restoration Read and Review Journal, and the title of the article was Alexander Campbell's Controversial Membership in the Baptist Church by Frank Ritchie. I got front page billing on that. And so I wish I had time to talk about Campbell a little more and the positions that he held and how he differed with the Baptist Church. But he was with the Baptist till 1828. By 1828, there were probably thousands of churches of Christ. So keep that in mind. George Forrester is one of those that preceded Campbell, and I'll mention him. He influenced religions, he was influenced religiously by the Haldanes, who were influenced by Glass and Sandeman, and he taught school in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He hired a young teacher named Walter Scott, and he baptized Scott for the remission of sins, not knowing anything about Alexander Campbell. Walter Scott was one of the greatest preachers that ever lived. There's a book about Scott called The Voice of the Golden Oracle. He was a great orator. He was one of the greatest preachers that the Church of Christ ever had. How many of you have heard of Walter Scott? Not the adventurer, the preacher. Not many of you. He's one of the big four in the Restoration Movement. Thomas Campbell, Alexander Campbell, Barton Stone, Walter Scott. And he had such a sway with people, it was amazing. They said that if he looked up, the people in the audience would look up. If he looked in this direction, the people would look over there. If he cried, the people would cry. They would get so wrapped up in what he was saying. And one time, Alexander Campbell, who was a very demure kind of person, was listening to him preach. And right in the middle of the sermon, Alexander Campbell jumped up and said, "Praise be to God!" And he looked around and thought, "I might ought to sit down," and he did, but that's how wrapped up Alexander Campbell was with Walter Scott. And so he was a great preacher, preaching the gospel prior to the time of Alexander Campbell. He had an influence on Alexander Campbell preaching baptism for remission of sins, along with Sidney Rigdon. Anybody know who Sidney Rigdon was? Sidney Rigdon was the first president of the Mormons, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He was a gospel preacher, but baptized many into Christ for remission of sins. I think the reason the Mormon Church today baptizes is because of the teaching of Sidney Rigdon. This is Scott's grave in Maeslick, Kentucky, and this is his exercise. He would go into a town. He had a way with children. Children would be playing in the streets, and he'd call, "Come over here, I want to teach you something. Hold out your hand. Get your little finger. Okay, listen now. Little finger's faith, and then repentance, and then baptism, and then remission, and Holy Spirit." And he'd go over that with him and say, "Now go home and tell your parents. That's what I'm going to be preaching about tonight." And he baptized large numbers of people by doing that. Scott, through his writings in The Evangelist, influenced two men who became gospel preachers in North Alabama. And they established two churches in North Alabama. One of them about 3 or 4 miles from right here, Dr. W.H. Wharton, who was a Presbyterian, decided they weren't preaching the truth. Joined the Baptists, decided they weren't preaching the truth, and so he started the Tuscumbia Church of Christ in 1834. This is the original building. I'm going to mention that again tonight. I'm going to mention that again tomorrow night during the Civil War and what happened to the Church of Christ in Tuscumbia during the Civil War. Also, Dr. J.H. Hunley was influenced by Scott, and he started the church at Mooresville. How many of you have been to Mooresville? If you go up 65 to 565 and head toward Huntsville, the first exit is the Mooresville exit. If you turn off on that exit and go about a half a mile, you will enter another world. You will go back in time 150 years. It's amazing. And so these churches were started through Walter Scott, not through Alexander Campbell. Now, let me just point this out, that when I start tracing my history in the church back, I don't trace it back to Alexander Campbell, and I don't trace it back to Barton Stone. I trace it back through these people. Glass, Sandeman, Walter Scott. Where was I before? Dr. Wharton, W.H. Wharton, who baptized Dickie Wade. And John Dickie Wade started the church in Iron City. And my mama was a member of that church in Iron City. You see those connections down through the centuries? So I didn't become a Christian through any teaching of Alexander Campbell. By the way, to me, restoration history is such an exciting thing because I learned so many things. First of all, there was not a photograph of Hundley in existence that anybody knew about until I found it. And we've been able to post this. There was not an image of any of these other folks that I mentioned until I found these. And by the way, back about 15 years ago, I interviewed Mr. McCrary, the great-grandson of J.H. Hundley. And that's J.H. Hundley's Bible that he's holding. And I had been told that there was a portrait of Hundley that existed somewhere. And in the foyer of Mr. McCrary's home was this portrait of J.H. Hundley. So this is exciting to me. I get excited about discovering things and learning things. Henry Arriet, I'm not going to spend much time on this, but he started the Manhattan Church of Christ in 1811. As far as I know, Alexander Campbell had not preached a sermon in America in 1811. His son, Henry Arriet taught these things before he ever heard of Campbell. Remission of sins through baptism. Escape the wrath to come by baptism. Men are born the children of God by baptism. We're sanctified and cleansed by baptism. Men are regenerated by baptism. Christians in the early ages believed that baptism was necessary to salvation. Infant baptism is unauthorized. It was in baptism that early Christians professed to have their sins washed away. And we put on Christ through baptism, thus passing from death to life. All of that taught before Alexander Campbell ever even came to that conclusion. So, we can move, and Isaac Arriet's his son. I don't have time to deal with all this. I'm going to move quickly. Joseph Thomas lived from 1791 to 1835, and he came before Campbell, and he made the statement that before Campbell came to America, there were 200 churches and 10,000 members that were members of the Christian Church, also known as the Church of Christ. Did Alexander Campbell start the Church of Christ? No. This is his gravestone. Also found these two. Jim Walsh shared these with me. He's from Boston. He was walking around Boston one day, saw these signs, Church of Christ, 1710. Now, I've not been able to determine what these folks believed or anything about it, but I want you to know that the term Church of Christ was used a long, long time prior to Alexander Campbell. I wish I had time to talk about stone. None of you have probably ever been called a stonite, but if you're going to be called after a man, that would probably fit better than Campbellite because he had more influence in this area than Alexander Campbell, and he preceded Campbell. In 1800, he rode to Russellville, Kentucky, which is about a mile north of, about an hour north of Nashville. And there was a revival there called the Red River Revival. And so he decided the next year he would have a revival at Cane Ridge Presbyterian Church where he preached. That's in August of 1801. Cane Ridge House was built in 1791. They had this revival in 1801. It's estimated that 20,000 to 30,000 people attended this 1801 meeting. They met until the horses had eaten up all the grass around Cane Ridge and had to go home. Now, the building, the log building, is now encased in this stone building. I had the opportunity to speak in that log building one time several years ago. But here's something I want you to notice about Campbell. having the true doctrine before Campbell. The grave of William Rogers at Cane Ridge, notice this right here. It says, united with the Church of Christ in Cane Ridge in 1807. Where was Alexander Campbell in 1807? He was a teenager in Ireland. Okay? And then there's another grave there that goes back to 1804, or a man obeying the gospel. He was a member of the Church of Christ in the bosom of which he died on the 22nd day of December 1804. So he died in 1804. He had obeyed the gospel and become a member of the Church of Christ prior to 1804. Where was Campbell at the time? He was a teenage boy in Ireland. He hadn't gotten to America yet. And here are some buildings. And these buildings are still in existence. And that's the Cambridge building in 1803 when they took a stand for New Testament Christianity. The Rock Springs Church in Salina, Tennessee in 1805. Old Philadelphia in Viola, Tennessee in 1805. And the Old Mulkey Church in 1809. By the way, the Old Mulkey Church, that's the photograph I have on my book. And that building and area is now owned by the state of Kentucky, and I had to get permission from the state of Kentucky to use that photograph. But all of these dates precede Alexander Campbell except the 1809 date, which was the year that Campbell came to America. So we'll talk about some of these. By the way, I'll mention also the Rocky Springs Church in Jackson County, Alabama. And the date on it is 1807. I don't think the date's right. I think it's a little later. But I'll tell you what, that church started before anybody in North Alabama ever heard of Alexander Campbell. John Mulkey was one of these great early preachers. He struggled to accept Calvinism as taught by the Baptist Church, and he just couldn't get into it. This required religious experience to be saved. Mulkey could not read of a religious spirit in the Bible that resulted in salvation. He struggled with Baptist doctrine, trying to reconcile it with the Bible. In November 1809, the differences had become so great, it resulted in the division of the Mill Creek Baptist Church. Two-thirds of the members of that church exited to the west with Mulkey. One-third exited to the east to remain with the Baptist Church. One of those who exited with Mulkey was Hannah Sovereigns, Daniel Boone's sister. Mulkey had known the Boones before they moved into Kentucky when they were back in North Carolina. So the building remained under the influence of the majority. So how did Mulkey influence folks? Within the next 2.5 years, more than half the preachers in the Stockton Valley Baptist Association left to preach the Bible only. That means they left the Baptist Church and became members of the Church of Christ. One of John's sons, Philip, went to Oregon and preached there. In 1823, John Mulkey baptized Mansell W. Matthews in Spring Creek in Tuscumbia, Alabama. And Matthews led the First Church of Christ to Texas. And I'll talk more about that later on. First Church of Christ in Texas came from Lauderdale County, Alabama. Well, back in the early 1800s, there was a road heading out of North Carolina toward Memphis and one heading out of Lexington, Kentucky toward Alabama. And the first interstate in America, by the way, was the Zanesville, Ohio to Florence, Alabama interstate. I don't know if you've ever heard of that or not. But if you go to Pope's Tavern, you can find one of those markers. And the first interstate in America was from Zanesville, Ohio to Florence, Alabama. And it came down that road and then turned west toward Florence and ended at Florence. So this area right here is interesting. You had a crossroad, and it started building up. People started settling there, and they decided, well, we need a church. And somebody said, well, what kind of church are we going to build? We've got all these different groups. And somebody came up with a novel idea. They said, why don't we just build a building and take the Bible and do what it says? And they said, all right, we'll do that. And within a short period of time, they found out they were teaching the same thing that Barton Stone was teaching up in Kentucky, the Bible alone. And so this church in Viola, Tennessee, the Old Philadelphia Church, was established in 1805. Where was Alexander Campbell in 1805? He was a teenager in Ireland. All right, and here's the building that exists today. This building was built in 1830. It's the second building. I've been able to go to this building a number of times, and this is the interior of the building. And out in the front, there's a list of who's who of gospel preachers that preached there from 1805 to 1940. And I heard one of those preachers preach. I was very young, and he was very old. And that preacher was Marshall Keeble. And it's believed that he baptized somewhere between 30, or responsible for the conversion of somewhere between 30 and 40,000 people in his lifetime. He was a black preacher. His second wife was from Colbert County, by the way, out in Leighton. So there's a connection there. And then out of the old Philadelphia church, that road went south into Jackson County, and that's where the Rocky Springs Church was, in the Antioch community in Rocky Springs. And here's the Rocky Springs building that exists today. It is the oldest continually meeting Church of Christ in the state of Alabama. And on the plaque there, it says that it was started in 1807. I think the date's wrong. Because William J. Price, who was a member of the church at Old Philadelphia, started the church at Rocky Springs. And if you look at his gravestone, you'll find that he was born in 1793. Well, if he started that church in 1807, he was 14 years old. So historians get things wrong sometimes. Sometimes you have to go back and find the truth through research. But I think this church started long before anyone in that area ever heard of Alexander Campbell. Benjamin Lim was the first to bring the gospel to Alabama. He came to Huntsville in 1810. I'm going to talk about that more this afternoon. He died in 1814 in Madison County. His family moved to Lauderdale County in 1816. How did the church get to Lauderdale County? Through Benjamin Lynn's two daughters, Rachel and Esther. Esther Chisholm and Rachel Despain. And they started two churches in Lauderdale County. So Benjamin Lynn's daughter, Esther Chisholm, moves into this area. 1826, B.F. Hall comes through this area. I'll talk about Hall later. And married their daughter, Dorinda, and there are their graves, and they're located 4 miles north of Florence, just off the Chisholm Highway. John Wright in Kentucky is another one of these people that knew the truth long before Campbell was ever known to preach it. He was born in Kentucky. He moved to Indiana Territory in 1807. In 1810, he formed a Church of Independent Baptists. And by 1819, he had taken the position of the Bible alone. Let's just do what the Bible says, not what some denomination says. 1819, he offered a resolution to the Blue River Baptist Church that they discard party names and should, misspell that, be called Friends or Disciples or Christians. He proposed that the church should be called the Church of Christ, long before Alexander Campbell ever preached his first sermon in America. Another of these people is Herman Dasher. Dasher lived in the Valdosta, Georgia area. He was a Baptist preacher. He sought salvation among the Baptists, but he couldn't have a religious experience. The Baptists taught you had to have some kind of religious experience in order to be saved. He couldn't get that experience. And so he came to the conclusion that the Baptists were not following the Bible, because he couldn't find that in the Bible. He began searching the Bible for truth about the church. And in 1820, he moved to Valdosta, Georgia, where he and others established the Church of Christ. It was many years after the baptism of Dasher before he knew of anyone else contending for the truth, as is in Jesus, as he and those associated with him were doing. So I've run through this real quickly, and I've got more to say. But do any of you have any questions up to this point? Questions or comments about any of the things I've said? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
One of the first slides that you put up, yeah, were all of the churches in England that you had found?
Yeah.
Did they have a particular moniker that they went under, or a particular name that they went under at that point?
Well, most of them call themselves Churches of Christ, but most people didn't call them that. They gave them these other names, like Baptist, Anabaptist, with all large, on and separatist, and on and on and on. That's what they were called. You know, and people call us Campbellites. Does that mean we're Campbellites? Well, no. No, we're members of the Church of Christ. And so, regardless of what people call you, that may not be who you are. That may just be a description that other people have used as to who you are. John Taylor of Franklin County. How many of you are familiar with John Taylor? Well, you need to be. Okay. John Taylor was a member of the Baptist Church. And this was down in Marion County, I believe, at the Wade Baptist Church. And he never did join the Baptist Church because the Baptist Church required a religious experience. And he never had a religious experience. And so one day, the preacher was up in front of the group one Sunday, and he was preaching. And he quoted Acts 2:38. And John Taylor jumped up and said, "I found it!" And the preacher said, "John Taylor's got religion." And he said, "No, but I know how to get it. To be baptized into Christ for remission of sins, just as those people on the day of Pentecost." And so he tried to get this Baptist preacher to baptize him. He couldn't get him to do it. Finally, he got him under the cover of darkness the second time they planned to meet. And this Baptist preacher baptized him for remission of sins. And Taylor turned around and baptized the Baptist preacher. And that Baptist preacher had to leave the Baptist church. He moved off and left the state of Alabama and became a gospel preacher. So there were a number of churches of Christ formed by Brother Taylor. He was called a Campbellite, and he didn't know who they were talking about. He'd never heard of Campbell. And he did not learn what he preached from Mr. Campbell or from any other man, but he learned it from the New Testament. And by the way, John Taylor's buried in the Shady Ridge Church of Christ Cemetery. How many of you know where Shady Ridge is? Anybody? Y'all don't get out in Colbert County much, do you? Phil, I'm going to talk about Abraham Ricks this afternoon. I believe you know where Abraham Ricks' place was, don't you?
Thanks to you.
Stacy, I believe you know where that is too, don't you?
Yeah, you showed me this a couple days ago.
Yeah, about last Thursday, Stacy and I met for lunch and to work on this. And I said, well, I'll just take you out to Spring Valley and show you Abraham Ricks' place. Abraham Ricks was one of those early ministers or early members of the Church of Christ, had influence on the Church of Christ in Colbert County. We're going to talk about that tonight, because tonight we're going to talk about how the gospel came to Northwest Alabama. Now, we're just going to hit high spots, because that lesson is a part of about four or five different lessons that I have that I've had to put together to come up with a single lesson. And I've had the opportunity to share this information in a number of places, at different venues and so forth, but we're going to have to kind of mash it all together to get this lesson this evening on how the church came to Northwest Alabama. Would you like to know how the church came here? I think that's important. Where was the first church in Franklin County? Anybody know? It was in Tuscumbia. Now, how could that be? Okay. And how is that, Stacy?
Franklin County was also Colbert County until they divided.
Yeah, in 1867. So all this was Colbert County until after the Civil War. So several years ago, I was asked to speak at the Russellville Bicentennial on Churches of Christ. Same year, I was asked to speak in Florence for the Florence Bicentennial on Churches of Christ. I don't know how they got my name to speak on these things. But I asked that question in the meeting. Where was the first Church of Christ in Franklin County? Nobody knew. And I said, it was in Tuscumbia. But people tend to forget that all of this area here to the Tennessee River was a part of Franklin County prior to 1867. Rock Creek Church of Christ. How many of you know where the Rock Creek Church of Christ is? Again, y'all don't get out much, do you? You got to go down 247 to find it. How many of you know people who attended Rock Creek Church of Christ? How many of you know Herschel Henry? How many of you know Kenneth and Louise Greenhill? There are a lot of folks that came out of Rock Creek Church of Christ in the 1970s that came to Southern Boulevard. Because in the 1970s, they closed this building and they built the Strigley Church of Christ and started teaching institutionalism. Those people left Rock Creek and came to Southern Boulevard. A lot of you know a number of these people. But John Taylor preached here. The Strigley family attended here. They were a very prominent family in early days. F.D. Strigley and F.B. Strigley were great, well-known gospel preachers. F.D. Strigley was the front page editor of the Gospel Advocate about 1900. T.B. Larimore preached here. How many of you know who T.B. Larimore was? How many of you know where T.B. Larimore's home was in Florence? Y'all don't get out much. Well, it's not there now. It burned 2018. But I had the opportunity to go into his home a number of times. He was the greatest gospel preacher on the planet at the turn of the 19th century. And he lived right here in North Alabama. After his house burned, I was able to buy at auction a photograph of Larimore. And one of the reasons I bought it, because I remember it hanging in Larimore's home there when I'd visited it a number of times. But Taylor had a great influence on F.D. That's Fletcher Douglas and Philo Bunyan Strigley. And both of them were great gospel preachers. Church continued to meet there until about 1970. And the building's still there. Great number of Christians in Franklin County and other places today are descendants of John Taylor. There was an old stone there. How many of you know what upping stones are? Anybody know what that is? Well, if you lived 150 years ago, you would have used them every day. Because every bank, every city square, every church had upping stones. And that was a stone where you pulled up your carriage or your horse and got down off of them. Because those things set up high. And there was an old upping stone at the Rock Creek Church. In fact, maybe the only story ever written about a stone I wrote. I wrote a story in my book about the old upping stone at this church. How many of you remember Herschel Henry? I asked Herschel one time, I said, Herschel, do you remember the old upping stone at Rock Creek? He said, I sure do. He said, when I was a boy, I used to ride a steer to church. Now think about that. He lived in that community. He said, I'd ride a steer to church, and I'd get off that steer on that upping stone. And so he remembered well. And by the way, that stone is at Heritage Christian University in Florence. Now it was moved there to protect it and keep it safe. I'm afraid somebody would, down in the country there, just make off with that upping stone. Wade Barrett was another of these preachers that learned the truth on his own. He came to Giles County in 1818. He was a Baptist preacher. He studied himself out of the Baptist doctrine. He led the Robertson Fork Church, Baptist Church in New Testament Christianity, and established a number of churches of Christ, including Old Linville, Elk Ridge, Robertson Fork, Wilson Hill, Antioch, and Rattling Springs, now Campbell Station. This is his grave up in Giles County. I've been there a couple times. This is the Robertson Fork Baptist Church. And by 1832, they were practicing New Testament Christianity and called themselves the Church of God. Today, this is the Robertson's Fork Church of Christ. This man had never heard of Alexander Campbell. He learned the truth on his own. He learned it from the Bible. So one of the greatest sources of Restoration Movement information is found on Scott Harp's website. The name of it is therestorationmovement.com. If you want to go there, you can find out a number of things. Scott was raised in Haleville, went to college over here at Heritage Christian, and is now up in Tennessee, I believe. But he has really preserved a lot of restoration material. When folks refer to me as a Camelite, I know that they do so out of ignorance or disrespect for what I believe. I am a Christian, nothing more, nothing less. In fact, Campbell wrote concerning those who would use the term Camelite, and he had this to say. And he wrote this, I believe, in 1830. Yeah, 1830. This was the first issue of the Millennial Harbinger. He said, "We do protest against christening the gospel of Jesus and the Christian religion by the name of any mortal man. To carry the principle out, we ought to call every man's sentiments by his name. Because we have disclaimed creeds, names, and sects, our adversaries seem to take pleasure in designating our writings and speeches by the name creed Campbellism, theory, system, etc. This is both unmanly and unchristian. Men fond of nicknaming are generally weak in reason, argument, and proof." And so Campbell detested the idea of people referring to the church of which he was a member as the Campbellite Church. Okay, that's all the material I have for you. Any of you have any questions?
Is the Mulkey, is that one, where's that one located?
Tompkinsville,
yeah.
Kentucky. Yeah, it's in Tompkinsville, Kentucky. It's now owned by the state of Kentucky, and the state of Kentucky keeps it up. It's a state park belonging to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, not the state of Kentucky.
And there used to be a guy named Bob Buchanan up in Kentucky that knew a lot of this history that you're talking about, preacher.
I've spent a lot of time with Bob Buchanan over the years, months and months on trips. I've never heard him teach about this. Now, I'm sure he probably did from time to time, but the experiences I had with him in going to Ghana and to the Philippines, he never talked about any of these things, because that would have been irrelevant to these folks in these foreign areas. But I'm sure Bob had done a lot of study on that.
He actually knew Dale Robbins.
Yeah, now
Dale. He arranged a small tour for us.
Right.
And it was very interesting. I wish it was recorded.
Yeah, well, Dale knew a lot about it also, and I had talked with Dale when I first started studying restoration history. And he invited me to come up and go with him to some of these places. I ended up taking tours of my own with folks up there and into Kentucky. And when I get further into this, I'll mention this. Probably outside of the Lexington, Kentucky area, there's more restoration history that took place in northwest Alabama than any other place on the continent. And we'll get into that later on. Yes. Lollards. And I think that was the French name for some of these Anabaptists. What's an Anabaptist? What's an Anabaptist? They believed in adult baptism. Over 20 million Anabaptists were put to death by the Catholic Church because they believed in adult baptism. And there's so much history we don't... How many of you have heard of the 30 Years' War? Anybody heard of the 30 Years' War? It took place from 1618 to 1648 in Europe. 30 million people died in the 30 Years' War over religion. Differences between the Protestants and the Catholics. People are still fighting religious wars today. You don't believe it, turn on Fox this morning and you'll see the same thing going on, religious wars.